Did it take all the way till Rosh Chodesh Nisan? No. Pretty much 3 months. Is that what you just said? I'm sorry, I didn't hear. Till Kislev. So this Hava to Moshe is during that time, so that he can inspect everything. So Rav Simon in his book, to Imre Baruch, asks the following question. He says, why is it that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't go to the people to inspect the goods? Why didn't he go to the factories? Why didn't he make the people bring it to him? Doesn't it seem like it's a bit haughty to, you know, I'm going to sit here and everyone come to me and I'll inspect it? Right? Rather than go out to the people, he said, I'm going to sit here, you know, kind of like Yertle the turtle. Everyone come here and serve me. You know, seems a little bit haughty. Yeah, if you will. So why did he do it nevertheless, even though it seems a little bit haughty? So Rav Simon says the following. Rav Simon says that there was a potential danger in going out to the people. What was the potential danger in going out to the people? That he would then have to prioritize who he would go visit first. And if he would have to go and prioritize he who would go visit first, then people might have gotten jealous and upset at one another. And because it might possibly lead to lack of peace between members and factions of Klal Yisrael, he did not want to take that risk. So he deliberately, knowing full well at the risk of looking haughty, which he was anything but, we know that he was an Adam Mikol Adam, and I'm sure it drove him crazy to have to do this, but at the risk of seeming, right, of ostensibly being cast as typecast as someone who's haughty, nevertheless he was willing to take that upon himself, just in order so that there'll be peace and amongst the members of Klal Yisrael. Okay? Anyway, following the construction of the Beis HaMikdash, right, as they brought everything to him, right, it says, Vayar Moshe kol hamelacha, Moshe saw the inspection is over, he saw, v'hineh asu otak asher tzivah Hashem ken asu. They did it just as God commanded. It passed inspection, right? Everybody suits inside, inspected by number 5, you know, like inspected, whatever. I don't know what those are. I don't know what those numbers are. But anyway, so here you had the Moshe stamp of approval. V'hineh asu, the inspection is over. And then it says, v'ayvarech otam Moshe. Moshe gave them a blessing. Right before they were about to construct the Mishkan, Moshe gave them a blessing. What was the blessing? So Rashi tells us based on the Medrash. The blessing was, Yehi Ratzon Shetishra Shechina B'Maaseh Yadechem. Right? Tishra Shechina B'Maaseh Yadechem. The Shechina, the Divine Presence, should dwell in your handiwork. This bracha is slightly, should raise an eyebrow. Slightly enigmatic and puzzling. Because, if you recall back, 6 weeks ago when we got, 5 weeks ago when we got the tzivui for the Mishkan, so what did it say? V'ikhuli truma, right? The Bemnesra v'amatam, v'ikhuli truma, v'ikhuli shesheden v'amikhuli truma, right? Blah, blah, blah. V'zat the truma shetik kum yitam. V'asuli mikdash, they should make for me a mikdash. What are the next two words? V'shachanti betocham. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that he's going to dwell inside the people of Klal Yisrael. So what kind of a bracha is this? V'yivarech otam, Yehi Ratzon Shetishra Shechina B'Maaseh Yadechem, that the Shechina should dwell in your handiwork. Because Baruch Hu said he dwell in the handiwork. That's not a bracha. You know, goes to a person for, somebody just got his check, his salary, he got his whatever it is, $10 an hour of babysitting, and then give me a bracha, I hope you get you $10 for babysitting. The guy just committed that he's going to give me $10. What's this all about? The Ksav Sofer says the following. The key over here is the Yehi Ratzon. Oftentimes we get brachas from people and right, Yehi Ratzon, may it be, and we translated it as how? May it be?
Your will.
Really? How do you spell that for me? Capital Y-O-U-R, that's what you meant? understand your question.
Think.
Okay, fine. That's maybe okay. Like if that's what you're. Maybe Hashem's will. Thy will. Your will. All right. But here is the chiddush of the Ksav Sofer. This Yehi Ratzon was made be your will, lowercase y. May it be your will. Sometimes things can happen, but it's not necessarily according to in line with our desires. Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that I'm going to give Shechina. But that doesn't necessarily mean that everyone desires Shechina. I remember it was a long time ago when we were in high school. So high school Rebbe said to one of the guys, yo, I'll make up a name, yo, Baruch, you want Mashiach to come? He's like, yeah, I want Mashiach to come. So he's like, you sure you want Mashiach to come? He's like, yeah, it's going to be awesome. He says to him, you know that if Mashiach comes, right, and we have a Beis HaMikdash and a Beis Din, then likely half the things you did last week would render you under, you know, beneath the rack upon the lash, upon the rack beneath the lash. You'd be beaten for half the things you did, half the things you had. He's like, oh, yeah, maybe I'm not so looking forward to Mashiach. Right, sometimes when we don't have desire is an important element and component of everything we do. Right, so sometimes the Shekhinah itself is something that's complicated. Do we want the Shekhinah? Do we not want the Shekhinah? There's a high price to pay. I remember once discussing with Rav Miller Shlita from the Gris Kolel. You know, I very much wanted to move to the old city of Yerushalayim. Still want to move to the old city of Yerushalayim. So he says, you know, if I lived in the old city of Yerushalayim, I would probably bench a lot better. Meaning there's a high stakes when there's Shechina Shora. He says, you can't just move into the old city, right? And recognize that also entails a burden and responsibility. And what Moshe Rabbeinu was telling them over here is that I give a bracha that it should be your desire as well that the Shechina should always be with you. Despite the fact that it's going to be a greater responsibility, I don't want to call it a burden. It should not be a burden. It should be only a greater responsibility and not a burden. That's the bracha of Moshe Rabbeinu, that the Ratzon should be there. On this point of Ratzon, I do want to mention that Ratzon is not something that you got it or you don't got it. Sometimes people say, what can I do? I don't like learning, so that's it. I don't like learning. What can be? It's not true. Ratzon is something that can be developed. We have it in many, many elements of our life, and we don't seem to resent it. But when it comes to learning, sometimes for whatever reason, and our Avodas Hashem, we resent it. For example, there is a list of famous foods. For example, black salt is amongst those things. Black salt. Has anyone ever had black salt? Right. You've had it once, twice, three times?
Once.
Did you like it? It was interesting. That's your way of saying no. It was horrible. Black salt is what's called an acquired taste. Right? There are certain things in the world that are acquired taste. There are certain things that you taste them the first time, and they are very not palatable to you. But if you keep on doing it over the course of time, you will acquire a taste. Right? Very, very few people in the world like beer when they first taste it. But many, many people in the world drink beer. And the reason why they do it is because at some point in their life, they continue to drink it, either for social pressure or whatever it may be, and eventually they got an acquired taste for it. They've acquired a taste for it. It became desirous to them. Last year we had Australians in the yeshiva for about 6 weeks, and they gave me a piece of toast to eat with Vegemite on it. Vegemite is basically yeast spread. And they're like, yeah, Rabbi, taste it. And I was like, all right, whatever, I'll eat it. I took one bite, and before the flavor caught up with me, I was like, oh, that's not so bad. And then I was like, oh, this is hard. It's an acquired taste. But since they have it from the time that they're born, right? So it's the same thing with Avodas Hashem and Talmud Torah. Right? Sometimes we don't desire it. And so we say, you know what, forget it, it's not for me, I don't like it. But the lesson over here is that Moshe was giving a blessing that you should desire it, it should be a ratzon, and a ratzon is not something that you can acquire. Ratzon is an acquired taste. A person can go ahead and develop a sense of desire for anything, and if it's an acquired taste, Avodas Hashem and Shechina is an acquired taste. Okay. I'll give you one maaseh about that. There's a Reb Shach, who was the posek ador, passed away in 1990. Reb Shach passed away in 93 or 2000. What? Well, no matter what, it wasn't recent. I think it was 2000. I think it was when I was in Shalvim. I just don't remember if it was when I was in Shalvim Shana Aleph or in the Kola. Yeah, probably when I was in the Kola. I guess 2000. 2001, 2002. Anyway. So, Rav Shach was in Bnei Brak, and there was some big philanthropist, wealthy businessman that used to consult sometimes. That used to consult sometimes with Rav Shach, and he came, and when he would come, they would clear the room. So he came, and in front of him there was a man and his child, who asked the philanthropist, "Would you mind? I know you're here at this very important, but my son is really not succeeding in school. He doesn't enjoy learning at all. I just want a bracha from Rav Shach so that my son will enjoy learning." So the philanthropist figured, okay, how long could that possibly take? 1 minute, he's waiting here all day. I can wait another 1 minute. I've waited 2 days till I flew in from the state. I'll wait another minute. But he's waiting there, and the boy and Rav Shach were in the room with the father for about an hour and a half. And the boy came out with the father. So the father says, "I'm sorry, I didn't realize it would take that long." So he asked him, "What took that long? What took that?" So he said, "We asked Rav Shach for a blessing. Rav Shach said that Ratzon, you know, to give you a blessing to desire to learn is not the way you do it. You have to develop learning." And he said, "Rav Shach sat there with my son, and together they learned the Mishnah. And then he asked my son, 'Do you have any questions on the Mishnah?' And then they went to a Rashi, and then a few lines of Gemara, and then even a Tosfos. And then for an hour and a half, they sat there learning, and my boy became elated. But that was the lesson of Rav Shach. You cannot just hocus pocus here. I like it. I don't like it. You have to try to acquire that taste. Ratzon is something that you can work on. And that's perhaps the bracha of Moshe Rabbeinu, was not just that may you hocus pocus have it, but you hear Ratzon, meaning work on it so that you will desire the Shechina to be shower.
It actually also work well with the words of the Pesukim, B'chol Ma'aseh Yadayim. It's like actual work. Maybe. Working on it.
Okay. Fascinating point in Perek Mem Pasuk Yud Ches from this morning. Perek Mem Pasuk Yud Ches talks about when Moshe is now putting up the Mishkan. It says, "Vayaka Moshe sa Mishkan, Vaitenet Adanav, Vayasemet Krashav, Vaitenet Brichav, Vayakemet Amudav." Moshe erected the Mishkan. He then put the Adanim. Adanim are the base
sockets,
thank you. Vayasemet Krashav, and then he put the pillars, the beams, into the sockets. Vaitenet Brichav, right? Then he put the cross beams. Vayakam at Amudav, or cross beams. And then, right? And then eventually, after over that, he draped Vayfros at Ohol. But the Sforna says something fascinating. Vayakam at Mishkan. He erected the Mishkan. Doesn't mean he erected the Mishkan. What is Mishkan? Mishkan says the Sforna was one of the parts of the overall structure that we call Mishkan. What was it? It was very good. It was the tapestry, the panels of tapestry. There were Eser Yeriot. There were 10 panels made from the hides and the fabrics, etc. So essentially, the construction of the Mishkan was like this. Moshe lifted up the tapestries, or he had people lift up the tapestries, either people or by miracle. Then he put under the tapestries the sockets. Then he put, right, he kind of like, assuming this is the tapestry. The tapestry was kind of hanging there. Then he put the socket. Then he put the wood to hold the tapestry. So now the tapestry is being held by the wood, and then the crossbeams, etc. The question is, why would he do it in such a convoluted way where he first puts the tapestries and only then would he put the wood under, right? Imagine if somebody's building a sukkah. Would he ever, in his wildest dreams, first say, okay, listen, I need 25 guys to help me build a sukkah. You guys hold this tapestry around, right? You guys hold the fabric around. And then I'm going to come in with the beams and I'm going to build the frame for the sukkah. And then it will be perfect, you know. Of course not. What you're going to do is first you're going to construct the frame and then you're going to drape it. So why did Moshe do it in this convoluted backwards way? It's a rhetorical question. I'm about to answer it, but if you want
to. I think it's also weird that, like, the tapestry's top, and when we build our sukkah, we build top left. Like, not to let the stock down until you're finished.
Right.
And it kind of, like, relates to each other. Well,
yeah. Kind of... Okay. Yeah. By the sukkah, it's exactly because of why the schach has to go last. But it's a fair point that you make. So why did he do it in such a fashion? So there is a Musar point that one learns out from this particular order. And it's brought in the Shemi Shmuel. It says, sometimes, we might think of ourselves as not ready for a particular endeavor. And because we're not ready for a particular endeavor, in our minds we're not ready for the particular endeavor, we just simply resist attempting it. Right? And the lesson that Moshe was trying to teach us is that if you sometimes nevertheless attempt it, you'll grow into the endeavor and you'll succeed. This happens a few times. For example, we weren't really ready for Yetzias Mitzrayim. We were on Memtet Shari Tumah. We were on just about the lowest rung of Tumah possible, imaginable to man, before we would have been lost forever. Right? Very, very far away from Har Sinai. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu had Har Sinai in his mind. You know, he said the target goal. And then we grew into that target goal. Sometimes when you challenge people to grow to a certain place, they can, in fact, step up to the plate. Similarly, you have over here, right? There was a target goal. Our target goal is the Mishkan, and we're, right, particularly after Chet HaEgel, people thought, probably HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not interested anymore in this Mishkan idea. Sure, a long time ago, he was all excited about V'shachanti B'tocham, about dwelling inside of us. But now, post-Egel, we're too far off. We've negated any desire that he has to dwell amongst us. It's not going to work. Let's not. So here in this special way of constructing the Mishkan, Moshe Rabbeinu is teaching them that don't let your own perceptions of things skew your ability to try. Try it. You never know. Try to make it, grow into it, and you may in fact succeed. For example, we have the same thing by Shabbos. But Shabbos, really Kiddush should be during the day. Right? Zachos Yom HaShabbos Lekadsho. And even in terms of our own conventional wisdom, we would imagine that first, Sur Mera, first let's work on like getting rid of all the drudge of the week. Let's focus on the Shamor first. Right? Let's just do the Yisrael. And then when we feel a sense of holiness, that's when we'll be ready to do Kiddush. But Chazal in their infinite wisdom say no. Make Kiddush right away. Challenge yourself. Grow into it and push yourself to the brink, to your limit until you're able to do it. That's the lesson of the construction of the Mishkan for Moshe. First put up the Urios. It seems so counterintuitive, but at the same time, it's a lesson for us to try to aim high and not resist endeavoring just because it is seemingly impossible. Things that are seemingly possible are accomplishable. I think Pepsi has a whole ad campaign now about making it impossible. I don't know exactly. Okay. A few more quick ideas. It's interesting to note that the Mishkan was the greatest, most concentrated form of Shechina dwelling in Klal Yisrael that we ever had. Meaning, as long as the Bnei Yisrael were not moving, there was Shechina dwelling in the Mishkan. In Bayis Rishon, we also had Shekhinah, but it was not as constant a presence as we had in the Mishkan. And in Bayit Sheni, we had even less. You know, we didn't have the Aron, we didn't have... The Shekhinah was not Shora as much in Bayit Sheni. So, in Bayit Shlishi, Be'ezras Hashem, it will be again. So Mishkan was the most, Bayit Rishon was a little bit less, Bayit Sheni was even less than that. Ironically, though, if you look at the expense report of each one of those buildings, Mishkan was the cheapest to build, although it seems very expensive to us, looking at it. But the Mishkan was the cheapest. Bayit Rishon was a little bit more expensive. And Bayit Sheni, you know, especially with the Hordus reconstruction and everything, that was the most expensive of all the, and not just because inflation, meaning because the amount that they invested. So it's just, sometimes people think that, you know, the riches and the glamour, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is looking for, and that's what determines whether or not HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks a lot more to people's hearts than he looks into their pockets. And that's the lesson of the fact that Rav Simcha Ras said this, that the Mishkan had constant Shekhinah, the Bayis Rishon had a lot of Shekhinah, but not constant, and Bayit Sheni had even less Shekhinah. The more expensive it got, there's not necessarily correlation with Shekhinah being there. Sometimes, right, it's an inverted U-curve. Sometimes having the money is not the greatest thing in the world. Okay. It says, I skipped one word, in Perek Lamed Ches, Pasuk Chav Zayin, talking about the Adanim, Vayhi Me'at Kikar HaKesef Latzeket Et Adnei HaKodesh. Right? Ve'et Adnei HaParochet Me'at Adanim L'mi'at HaKikar. There were 100 Adanim corresponding to the Me'a Kikar, to the 100 Kikar that he got. Meaning each Eden was one Kikar. Me'at Adanim L'mi'at HaKikar. Says the Chidush Harim, that just like the Me'at Adanim, the 100 sockets were the base of the Mishkan, so too we have a responsibility that also corresponds to the number 100. The responsibility that we have that corresponds to the number 100 is? What's our responsibility that we have nowadays?
100 brachot.
100 brachas a day. Says the Chidush Harim, just like the Me'at Adanim, 100 sockets were the base of the Mikdash, so too 100 brachas that a Jew makes in one day, right, are and should be the foundation of his Avodas Hashem. So you encounter so much throughout the day that might sway you here and there, the winds of change that might sweep a person up, but if he's anchored, and, you know, 100 brachas a day means that usually an hour doesn't go by where you're not making a bracha, so that if you're anchored in those 100 brachas, if you're constantly turning back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and recognizing him, in fact, Adanim, and recognizing him as an Adon, then that is the base, the socket, the foundation of a Jewish life that will hopefully remain strong. The stronger the foundation, the more significant, the better the better ability the building has in lasting. The Chidush Harim. Okay, one last idea. I guess we won't get to Parsha Shkalim today. It says, the Meshech Chochma says, Lamed Tet Zayin, Perek Lamed Tet Pasuk Zayin, we have the Avnei HaShoam, etc. Vayasam Otam Al Kitfod HaEfod, right, he put the stones on the Ephod, Avnei Zikaron Livnei Yisrael. Stones of remembrance for Bnei Yisrael. The Meshech Chochma asks, what's the remembrance? What's the significance of this? Avnei Zikaron of Bnei Yisrael, right? There were 12 stones, each one a different tribe, but what's the Zikaron over here? Says the Meshech Chochma, the Zikaron was not for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't forget anything. The Zikaron was for Bnei Yisrael. The Zikaron was for Bnei Yisrael to recognize that they are, right? They are seen by God. The Kohen Gadol carries these stones as he enters into the Beis HaMikdash. He is Vayu Al Libo Bevol HaKodesh. They're on his heart as he enters the Kodesh. And when a person knows that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees him, when he remembers that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees him, Kivyachol, then he is able to perform on a much different level. Right? Sometimes a person when the person is challenged and I'll give you an example. Well, I'll give you the example. I think I mentioned the story once before, but it's important to mention again. We spoke about Kaddish once before. All right. We'll just quickly repeat the story. Kaddish was the name of a child. Kaddish was not his real name, but Rav. I don't know why I'm having such a difficult time remembering things today. Rav. Who wrote Permission to Believe and Permission to Receive? What? Yeah. Rav Kellerman. So he, one of his children, he named him Kaddish. He didn't really name him Kaddish, but that was the nickname. One time he was traveling to Yerushalayim with his children, and Kaddish, the youngest of the children, had to go to the bathroom. They were traveling from Yerushalayim to Netanya. It's a long bus ride, and there is no bathroom. And throughout the bus ride, he's trying to hold it in. He's doing all that he can. He's dancing, he's anything, you know, he's crossing his legs, anything that hopefully will just make him not have to urinate all over the seats. They finally arrive at Netanya, and they run off the bus searching for a bathroom, and his older sibling said, "Oh, we found a bathroom over there." "Oh, great, where is it?" "It's right there, it's in that pub over there." He says, "What's a pub?" "A pub is a place where people go buy drinks, get drunk, and dance to loud music." So right away, he stops and says, "Whoa. I'm not going in there. I'm Kaddish. I can't go into such a place." Right? And despite the fact that he was a young child and young children don't have such great control over their bladder, he says, "I cannot do that." And he was able to control himself, mind over matter, until he found a different bathroom in the place that he felt was more bekovedik for somebody whose name was Kaddish. That's the notion of the Avnei Zikaron. When we recognize that we're Kaddish, that's the remember. We have to remember that we're Lifnei Hashem, that we too are Kaddish. And when we recognize that we're Kaddish, it's going to impact our lives, because when, if let's say we're by in an office summer internship and we're by the water cooler and there's some sort of, you know, sultry conversation that we should not be engaged in, if we remember that we're Kaddish, then we'll walk away. If we forget, then we'll engage in conversation. If we're tempted to eat whatever, all of the business, I'll just have a salad. It's not kosher. It's just. Doesn't say that it's kosher, but it's not true. It's not kosher. So that's a very tempting thing to do sometimes. I don't want to look bad in front of these business associates. But if we remember that we're Kaddish, then we're able to keep ourselves in check a lot better. That's the Avnei Zikaron, that we should remember that we're in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and He sees us. That was also Yosef's inspiration. When Eshet Potiphar came, that should be our inspiration to remember that HaKadosh Baruch Hu watches over us and is interested in our service of Him. That's the design of it. Everyone have a great, wonderful show.